Chapter 26. At the end of the week, the Soviet Union announced that there had been a mysterious explosion aboard the Intercept satellite, which they had launched to photograph the ETI satellite. The force of the blast had destroyed both satellites. Cause of the mighty explosion was unknown, but presumed to be in the Soviet satellite's fuel supply. Dr. Moyashka had ordered a full inquiry. Only two pictures of the ETI satellite had been transmitted before it was destroyed. Surprisingly, they showed it to be pitted, and evidently partially damaged from meteor showers. The implication, Dr. Moyashka said, was that the ETI satellite had crossed a great deal of interstellar space before reaching its position in orbit around Earth. The conclusion that it was a very old satellite, long in orbit, was rejected as unscientific and not in accord with Marxist-Leninist reasoning. "So much for that," I said to myself as I watched the news item on TV. "They shot down God, or rather God's voice. Vox Dei," I said to myself, "gone now from the world. There must be many happy parties going on in Moscow." Well, I thought glumly, a great epoch in the history of man has reached its end. Nothing will instruct us. Nothing exists in our sky to cheer us when we are down, to lift us up and keep us alive, to heal our wounds. In Washington and Moscow, they are saying, "Man has finally come of age. He doesn't need paternalistic help." Which is another way of saying, "We have abolished that help, and in its place we will rule," offering no help at all, taking but not giving, ruling but not obeying, telling but not listening, taking life but not giving it. The slayers govern now, without interference. The dreams of mankind have become empty. That night, as Rachel, Johnny, and I, plus Pinky, our cat, lay together on the big bed in our bedroom, a pale white light began to appear and fill the room. Lying in my place on the bed, I realized that no one could see the pale light but me. Pinky dozed, Rachel dozed, Johnny snored in his sleep. I alone, awake, saw the light grow, and saw that it had no source, no location. It filled all spaces equally and made every object strikingly clear. What is this, I wondered, and a deep fear filled me. It was as if the presence of death had entered the room. The light became so bright that I could make out every detail around me. The slumbering woman, the little boy, the dozing cat, they seemed etched or painted, unable to move, pitilessly revealed by the light. And in addition, something looked down at us as we lay as if on a purely two-dimensional surface, something which traveled and made use of three dimensions, studied us creatures limited to two. There was no place to hide. The light, the pitiless gaze, were everywhere. "We are being judged," I realized. "The light has come on without warning to expose us, and now the judge examines each of us. What will his decision be?" The sense of death, my own death, was profound. I felt as if I were inanimate, made of wood, a carved and painted toy. We were all carved toys to the judge who gazed down at us, and he could lift any and all of us off our painted surface whenever he wished. I began to pray silently, and then I prayed aloud. I prayed strangely in Latin, a Latin I did not know, phrases and whole sentences and always begging to be spared. That was what I wanted. That was what I asked for over and over again, in many languages now, in every language, for the judge to pass over me and let me go. The pale, uniform light gradually faded out, and I thought to myself, "It's because the satellite is gone. That's why. Death has flooded in to fill up the vacuum. Once life has been destroyed, that which remains is inert. I am seeing death return." The next day, Rachel noticed that Pinky seemed sick. He sat without moving, and once, as he sat, his head fell forward and struck the floor, as if from unbearable weariness. Seeing him, I understood that he was dying. Death had claimed him, not me. I drove him to the Yorba Linda Veterinary Hospital, and the doctors there decided that he had a tumor. They operated while I drove back home. "We probably can save him," they told me as I left, seeing how disheartened I was, but I knew better. This was what had been ushered in, for all the world. The first victim was, of course, the smallest. Half an hour after I got back to the apartment, one of the veterinarians phoned.
"It's cancer," she told me. "There is no renal function, no urine production. We can sew him back together and he'll live a week, but..."
"He's under the anesthetic still?" I said.
"Yes, he's still open."
"Let him drift away," I said.
Beside me, Rachel began to cry. My guide, I thought. Dead now. Like Charlie. Look at the forces in the world that are now unchecked.
He must have had these malignant tumors growing for some time, the vet was saying. He's underweight and dehydrated, and...
He died last night, I said. And I thought, he was taken instead of me. Me or Johnny or Rachel. Maybe, I thought, he wanted it that way. He offered himself, knowing. Thanks, I said. I know you did what you could. I don't blame you. The satellite had passed from our world, and with it the healing rays, like those of an invisible sun, felt by creatures but unseen and unacknowledged. The sun with healing in its wings. Better not to tell Sadasa, I decided. At least what Pinky died of. That night, while I was brushing my teeth in the bathroom, I abruptly felt a firm, strong hand placed on my shoulder from behind, the grip of a friend. Thinking it was Rachel, I turned and saw no one. He has lost his animal form, I realized. He never was a cat. Supernatural beings mask themselves as ordinary creatures to pass among us, to lead and guide us. That night I dreamed that a symphony orchestra was playing a Brahms symphony, and I was reading the album notes. The words came to an end, and there was the name Herbert. My old boss, I thought, who's been dead these years from his heart condition, who taught me what devotion to duty meant. A message to me from him. After the name there appeared a musical stave strung in catgut, indented into the soft paper as if by five claws. Pinky's signature. After all, Pinky could not write. I thought, my dead boss, who taught me so much and who is dead, reborn as Pinky, to lead me once again and then go away as before, when he couldn't stay any longer, a final note from him, or them, whichever it was, from my friend. In any case, he guided me through many years. He helped form me. And then he died. God be with him, I thought in my sleep, and I listened to the Brahms symphony, which was coming from a record booth at University Music. Booth number 3, behind which I had so often changed the toilet paper rolls in the bathroom as part of my job so many years ago. And yet he had been here just now, his firm hand gripping my shoulder with affection. In farewell. At Progressive Records we had begun taping sessions on the new LP, the catalog item into which Aramchek's subliminal information would be fed track by track. I had gotten permission from the company brass to give my material to the Playthings to cut. The Playthings were our hottest new group. The only part that worried me was the possible reprisals to them once the authorities became aware of the subliminal material. It would be necessary to set up machinery in advance to exonerate them and everyone else at Progressive. I therefore made extensive memos showing that the decision regarding their material lay entirely in my hands, that I had obtained and prepared the lyrics, that the recording group itself lacked any authority to remove or alter the lyrics. It took me almost 2 weeks of precious time to ensure their safety, but this was essential. Both Sadasa and I agreed. The reprisals, when they began, would be great. I hated to involve the Playthings at all. They were an amiable group, with malice toward none. But someone had to cut the LP tracks, someone who was a hot property. By the time I had completed the documentation, including signed letters from the Playthings protesting vigorously against the lyrics as not being suited to them, I was reasonably sure of their ultimate survival. One day as I sat in my office listening to some preliminary takes for the album, to be called Let's Play, my intercom came to life.
A young lady to see you, Mr. Brady.
Assuming it was a performer asking about an audition, I told the secretary in the front office to send her in. A girl with short black hair and green eyes entered, smiling at me.
Hi,
she said. Hi, I said, shutting off the takes of Let's Play. To the girl, I said, what can I do for you?
I'm Vivian Kaplan,
the girl said, seating herself. I now noted the FAP armband and recognized her. This was the fapper my friend Phil had told me about, the one who had wanted him to write a political loyalty report on me. What was she doing here? On my desk, on the portable Ampex tape recorder, was the reel of takes from Let's Play in plain sight of the girl, but fortunately off. Seating herself, Vivian Kaplan arranged her skirt, then brought out a notepad and pen.
You have a girlfriend named Sadassa Aramchek, she said. There is also the subversive organization calling itself Aramchek, and the extraterrestrial slave satellite, which the Soviets just blew up, has sometimes been called the Aramchek satellite.
She glanced at me, writing a few words with her pen.
Doesn't that seem to you an astonishing coincidence, Mr. Brady?
I said nothing.
Do you wish to make a voluntary statement?
Vivian Kaplan said. Am I under arrest? I said.
No, not at all. I tried without success to get a statement of political loyalty about you from your friends, but none of them cared enough about you to comply. In investigating you, we came across this anomaly, the word Aramchek showing up repeatedly in relation to you.
The only one that's related to me, I broke in, is Sadassa's maiden name.
You have no relationship to the organization Aramchek or the satellite?
No, I said.
How did you happen to meet Ms. Aramchek?
I said, I don't have to answer these questions.
Oh, yes, you do.
From her purse, Vivian Kaplan got a black flat pack of identification. I gazed at it, seeing that she was a bona fide police agent.
You can talk to me here in your office, or you can come downtown with me. Which do you prefer?
Can I call my attorney?
No.
Vivian Kaplan shook her head.
This is not that kind of investigation, yet. You haven't been charged with any crime. Please tell me how you met Sadassa Aramchek.
She came here looking for a job.
Why did you hire her?
I felt sorry for her, because of her recent bout with cancer. Vivian Kaplan wrote that down.
Did you know her actual name was Aramchek? She goes under the name Sylvia.
The name she gave me was Mrs. Sylvia. That certainly was true.
Would you have hired her if you knew her true name?
No, I said. I don't think so. I'm not sure.
Do you have a personal relationship with her as well as a business one?
No, I said. I'm married, and I have a child.
You were seen together at Delray's restaurant and at the La Paz Bar, both in Fullerton. Once at Delray's and 6 times at the La Paz Bar, all recently.
They serve the best margaritas in Orange County, I said.
What do you two talk about when you go to the La Paz Bar?
Vivian Kaplan asked. Various things. Sadassa Sylvia...
Aramchek.
Sadassa is a devout Episcopalian. She's been trying to convert me into going to her church. She tells me all the church gossip, though, and that turns me off. This was true, too.
We taped your last conversation at the La Paz Bar,
Vivian Kaplan said.
Oh?
I said with fear, trying to remember what we had said. Vivian Kaplan said,
What is this record you are going to be bringing out? There was a good deal of emphasis on it. A new LP by the Playthings?
That's going to be our new hit record, I said. I could feel the sweat standing out on my forehead and my pulse racing. Everybody at Progressive is talking about it.
You supplied the lyrics for the record?
No, I said. Just supplementary material, not the basic lyrics. Vivian Kaplan wrote all this down. It's going to be one hell of a record, I said.
Yes, it sounds as if it would be. You're going to press how many copies?
We hope to sell 2 million, I said. The initial pressing will be only 50,000, however, to see how it goes over. Actually, I plan to get them to press 3 times that number.
When can you make a copy available to us?
It isn't even mastered yet, I said.
Tape, then.
Yeah, we could get a tape to you sooner. It came into my mind that I could give her a tape which lacked the subliminal material. We would simply not add that layer of sound on sound.
It is our opinion, Vivian Kaplan said, after examining the evidence, that you are having a sexual affair with Ms. Aramchek.
Well, I said, you can stick it up your ass. Vivian Kaplan gazed at me for a time, then she wrote a few words with her pen. It's my business entirely, I said.
What does your wife say?
She says fine.
She knows, then?
I could think of no answer to that. I had walked into a verbal trap, but one which meant nothing. They were on the wrong track entirely. I thought, they have the wrong ball. Let them run it to the wrong goal line. Fine.
As far as we can tell, Vivian Kaplan said, you have completely severed your ties with your leftist Berkeley past. Is that so, Mr. Brady?
It is so, I said.
Would you like to draw up a statement of political loyalty about Ms. Aramchek for our files?
since you know her and can speak reliably about her?
No, I said.
We have great confidence in you, Mr. Brady, in terms of your patriotism.
You should have, I said.
Why would you turn this chance down to ratify your standing? This would virtually close your files.
Nobody's file is ever closed, I said.
Inactive, then.
Sorry, I said. Ever since the displacement of my own will by the ETI helper, I had found it difficult to lie. I can't oblige you, I said. What you want is evil and immoral. This is what is destroying the fabric of our society. Mutual spying by friend upon friend is the most insidious wickedness that Ferris Fremont has inflicted on a formerly free people. You can write that down, Miss Kaplan, and put it in my file. Better yet, you can paste it on the outside of my file as my official statement to all of you. Vivian Kaplan laughed.
You must feel you have a pretty good lawyer.
I feel I have a pretty good grasp of the situation, I said. Now, if you're through, get out of my office. I have tapes to listen to. Rising, Vivian Kaplan said,
When will you have the tape for us?
A month.
It will be the tape you'll use to transfer onto the master?
More or less.
More or less is not good enough, Mr. Brady. We want the exact master tape.
Sure, I said. Whatever. Lingering for a moment, Vivian Kaplan said,
We got a telephone tip from one of your sound engineers. He said there's some very funny stuff in some of the subtracks.
Hmm, I said.
It made him suspicious.
Which sound engineer is that?
We protect the anonymity of our informants.
You certainly should, I said.
Mr. Brady, Vivian Kaplan said briskly, I want to inform you at this time that you are terribly, terribly close to arrest. You and Ms. Zaramchek. In fact, your entire record firm. And anyone connected intimately with you, your families and friends.
Why?
We have reason to believe that there will be subversive sentiments expressed in the Let's Play album, put there probably by you and Ms. Zaramchek and possibly others. We are giving you the benefit of the doubt, however. We will examine the record before its release, and if we find nothing in it, you may release it on schedule and distribute as planned. But after analysis, if we find anything...
The curtain comes down, I said.
Pardon?
The Iron Curtain, I said.
What does that mean, Mr. Brady?
Nothing, I said. I'm just tired of all the suspiciousness, all the spying and accusing, all the arrests and murders.
What murders, Mr. Brady?
Mine, I said. I'm thinking specifically of that. She laughed.
You're highly neurotic, as your profile indicates. You worry too much. You know what is going to kill you, Mr. Brady, if anything does? Screwing around with that Aramchek girl at your age. The last time you had a physical exam, you showed elevated blood pressure. That was when you were admitted to the hospital in Downey, following...
The elevated blood pressure, I said, was because... I broke off.
Yes?
Nothing. Vivian Kaplan waited for an interval, and then she said in a low, quiet voice,
You don't have the satellite to help you anymore, Mr. Brady. They got the satellite.
I know, I said. You mean the ETI one? Yes, the Russians blew that up. I saw that on TV.
You're by yourself now.
What do you mean? I said.
You understand what I mean.
I don't, I managed to say. It was an effort to lie, a dreadful effort, an offense against myself. I could hardly do it. I thought the official U.S. position on that satellite was that it... What crap did I hear? A discarded satellite of our own or something like that? Not from outer space. Worthless. Our own obsolete signals coming back to us.
That was before the Soviet Union photographed it.
Oh, I said, nodding. So now the line has changed.
We know what that satellite was, Vivian Kaplan said.
Then how could you destroy it? What kind of demented mind could give the signal to destroy it? I don't understand you. You don't understand me, and I don't understand you. To me, you are insane. I ceased. I had said too much.
You want an alien entity ruling your mind? Telling you what to do? You want to be a slave to...
What the hell do you think you are, Ms. Kaplan? I said. That's what FAP is. A bunch of robots receiving their orders blindly and going out blindly to coerce everyone else who isn't already in the net into becoming a robot like them.
all following the will of the leader. And what a leader!
Goodbye, Mr. Brady,
Vivian Kaplan said, and my office door shut after her. She had gone.
I just put my head in the noose, I said to myself, like Phil did with her. She seems to have an ability to get you to do it one way or another. Phil did it one way, I did it another. I hope they pay her a good salary, I said to myself. She deserves it. She could entrap anybody. They have enough on me now, I realized, to execute a warrant any time they want. But they have always had enough. It makes no difference. They taped our conversation at the La Paz bar. They have all they need. And due process, the constitutional guarantees, are no longer observed anyhow. The national security issue is always invoked in matters like this. So the hell with it. I'm glad I said it. I lost nothing I hadn't already lost. There isn't much, I said to myself, that has not been lost, now that the satellite is gone. Within my mind, Firebright stirred. I felt his presence. He was still alive, still there within me, tucked away out of harm's way, safe. I was not completely alone. Vivian was wrong.